You're listening to WTSQ 88.1 FM in Charleston, West Virginia. Community radio made possible by community support.
All right, it is 11 a.m. and you are listening to The Morning Mix with Maya. I am joined on the phone with Erica Hauser, who is an author, a journalist, and a teacher. We're going to talk about the book that Erica has just now released and also a special book signing that is going to be happening at Taylor Books this week. Erica, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Maya. Thanks so much for having me on.
You are most welcome. So I would really like for you to kind of tell our listeners, what is the book, the title of your new book, and what is it about?
Sure. Well, the title is The Age of Deer, Trouble and Kinship with Our Wild Neighbors is the subtitle. And this is a nonfiction book that I started working on about 4 or so years ago. I got really interested in deer, not from any specific life experience that I had. I'm not a deer hunter or anything like that, but I realized that deer would be a really great way to ask some questions that I've been interested in for a long time as a writer. And those are questions around how humans fit into the natural world, how we relate to animals and to the environment, kind of where we fit in here, how we are affected by what we call nature and how we in turn have effects on nature and kind of what we mean by nature in the first place. What do we even mean when we use that word? I realized deer would be a great lens to look at all those questions. So it's a book that I did a lot of reporting for, lots of traveling, you know, meeting with people and observing them at their work, and that includes scientists and a woman who rehabilitates fawns. And I also did do some hunting. I didn't hunt myself, but I went along on some hunts and observed deer hunters.
That's really fascinating because there are so many different aspects to, you know, just us being humans and how different types of people interact with especially deer in the wildlife. You know, when talking about this, living here in the Kanawha Valley, we have a very large booming deer population. And if you live, especially in, I lived in South Charleston off of Montrose, and there were mornings when I would wake up and there would be 10 deer on our hillside just hanging out in the morning. So it's a very, very large population. So it would be hard-pressed to say that there are people that are living here in the Charleston area, especially, that haven't been, you know, affected or, you know, or haven't come in contact with our deer population that's here.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I think that's one of the really significant things about them, that they are a large wild animal that we still have the chance to encounter on a daily basis, you know, just in our kind of routine lives. And for a lot of people, especially in the eastern U.S., they're the only large wild animal that we're likely to see on that kind of daily basis. So I think that's really, really significant. And, you know, also the fact that deer can thrive so well in cities is just a really, really fascinating and kind of counterintuitive thing about them.
You know, there's a lot of for some people, you know, frustration that comes from deer, especially, you know, if you are a homeowner, you know, having them, right. For me, they would eat all of my flowers. And you also have the frustration of sometimes, you know, people who have had their cars, you know, they've hit a deer and it's done a lot of damage. You know, do you cover some of that in the book as well? The negative sides of how some people view deer and their populations in suburban areas?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of conflict between our species, lots of kind of getting on each other's nerves, just like neighbors often do. You know, we're sharing the space and we do kind of get in each other's way pretty often. And I do talk about that quite a bit in the book. And some of that's really from a first-person perspective as a gardener. where I live, it's pretty rural, and so we don't quite have that experience of that you might have in, you know, in the city or the suburbs, of deer kind of thriving among all the houses and the roads. Where I live, it's very forested, but we do grow a vegetable garden and some fruit trees and ornamentals, and so I know firsthand that deep frustration, and you know, it's an anger sometimes when you've been nurturing plants and deer come and mow them down. But I do really encourage always myself and hopefully my readers to look at all these things from as many perspectives as possible. And of course, that includes from the deer's perspective, and from their point of view, it's just food. And the concept of a garden is a completely human concept, right? That's, mm-hmm. that's something that we've kind of overlaid onto the landscape. It's all our concepts and our needs and our desires. So we can't get, you know, to be fair, we can't get too angry at deer when they don't understand that.
It's true. It is true. And I know that before I mention this, I wanted to thank James Cochran for connecting us with each other and making this interview possible. Thank you so much, James, for making Eric and I, you know, friends, and that we can talk about this new book, that you were doing a book signing and a reading at Taylor Books this Thursday. So I want to thank him first. But one thing he really wanted us to talk about was also about the, you know, the highway and how many humans do come in contact with deer on major highways and, you know, West Virginia and Virginia. And he said that there's some interesting things that Virginia has been doing that possibly West Virginia could learn some lessons about.
Yeah, well, let me just second your thanks to James, who also helped me set up the reading at Taylor Books on Thursday. So that's really wonderful. Thank you, James. So West Virginia, I believe, is the number one worst state in the country for deer vehicle collisions. And that's kind of in terms of how likely you are as a driver to have a collision with a deer. So it's really significant. Virginia, where I live, is fairly high up there on the list also. And I'm not sure why West Virginia is at the top of that list. Perhaps it has to do with the design of highways. I really don't know. I'm sure the topography and the landscape has a lot to do with it, and the deer population itself. Mm-hmm. But I do write in the book about a couple of really interesting projects that the Virginia Department of Transportation is doing near where I live in Central Virginia. One of them is a kind of an experimental fencing project. So along I-64 outside of Charlottesville, which I think is a road that we share. Doesn't I-64 go right through Charleston as well?
It does.
Yeah, so on our part of 64 here in Central Virginia, there are a couple of sections that are each about a mile long, where there's been a tall fence installed just along the interstate. And it's the locations were carefully chosen because these were stretches of the road where there were a lot of collisions with deer. And the idea was to try to keep the deer from entering the road, but funnel them into these crossings that are under the highway. So one of those, there's a fairly big bridge that goes over a small river. So that's a great place for the deer to cross under that bridge. The other one is a little bit less inviting. It's more like a tunnel. It's called a box culvert. So it's a long concrete tunnel, and it's a little bit, I walked through it myself, it's a little bit creepy in there. And the deer would not normally want to go in there. They would feel a little wary about that. Mm-hmm. But because of the fence, they have been encouraged to use that as a crossing. And the result has been really, really positive in terms of reducing the number of deer collisions in both of those areas. And then the other project that's going on in Virginia has to do with the carcasses that are collected from the roadside when deer are hit. Most of those, in most locations around the country, those are taken to the landfill, which is kind of obviously, you know, a shame. That's a waste, and it's also expensive for states and counties to do that. So there was a program here in Virginia to try composting those bodies instead, and that also was very successful. There was a system put in place that could completely compost a deer's body within about a month. So it's amazingly fast, and it can handle a lot of deer at once. And what you end up with is this kind of beautiful, rich compost that VDOT then uses to encourage grass to grow, you know, in areas where it would normally be tough to do that. So it's a really positive thing.
That's awesome. That is some really, really good ideas and ways to combat all of that and to help with some of those problems that come from that. I think I also saw that, I think it maybe was in Norway, one of these Scandinavian countries that create a earthen bridge over roads as well for their wildlife.
Yeah, I hadn't read about that particular project, but there are some interesting solutions like that. I know near Salt Lake City, there's something called a sky bridge, and it's a special bridge just for animals. And instead of being paved like we would have for cars, it's got, you know, soil and plants and rocks on it to make it feel like a more inviting place for animals to cross. And I know Canada's got some similar infrastructure, but those things are really expensive, and you have to think about that usually before you build a road. And of course, we have thousands and thousands of miles of roads in this country that are already built. So fencing can be in certain spots, can be a less expensive solution.
I would love to see that implemented here in West Virginia, the fencing, because it really is. I'm always on the lookout whenever I'm driving, you know, down certain parts of 64, and always on the watch for deer. I spot them very, very quickly and easily, because I have had a couple accidents with deer in the past and have had some major damage done to my car. And luckily I was unharmed, but it is pretty scary. And, you know, you are dealing with, you know, wild creatures. They're doing what they are instinctually, you know, made to do. And that is to, you know, look for their food and be out and about. So we are, in a lot of ways, we're in their world. Just like people always say with sharks in the ocean and things like that and fish, you know, we're in their world trying to inhabit their world as well. So yeah, we do have to find better ways to do it together.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a scary experience, and it can be really dangerous for everybody involved, including the people. So it's any way that we can figure out to decrease that is a good thing.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, you're going to be doing the book signing and a reading at Taylor Books on Thursday. People can find out more information on that on Taylor Books' Facebook page. And so what can someone expect at the book signing and the reading? Is there going to be certain aspects of the book that you really would like to cover, or ones that you like to read about when you're going to these?
Well, I'm planning on just giving a little bit of an overview of the book. I'd like to probably show some images that give a sense of kind of the range of different topics that I cover in this book, from, you know, medieval European deer parks to the way Native American groups historically made use of deer, not just meat, but also, you know, using hides and bones and other parts for all kinds of different uses. I find that really fascinating. And I think I was just looking at this right before we got on the air together, but I think I'll probably read from part of the book that talks about a workshop that I took at a primitive skills gathering, or an earth skills gathering is probably a better term for it. And this was a workshop where I was learning how to make some tools out of deer bones. This was in Western North Carolina a couple of years ago, and it was a really fascinating event. And so I'd like to share that with the audience. And I'm thinking that it's always great to have some time for Q&A questions and just to hear people's deer stories too. So if you're going to come to the event, start thinking about the deer stories from your life, and maybe there'll be a chance to share some of those.
I love that. So let's talk a little bit about some of the other things that you have done in your life. You're a journalist as well, and an author and a teacher. You know, so what are some of the other books and things that you've worked on or interesting articles that you've put out?
Well, I have kind of a multiple personality as a writer, I guess. I have an MFA in poetry, and I've published a couple books of poetry as well. This book is a real departure from that. It probably has more in common with my work as a journalist, because I did so much reporting and kind of research for this book. Lots of reading, lots of interviews, and travel, as I said. I'm still at it. It's been more than 20 years that I've been contributing to our local weekly newspaper here in Charlottesville, which is called the Seaville Weekly. And I got involved with the Seaville Weekly pretty soon after I graduated from college, within a couple years of college, and I'm still at it more than 20 years later. So it's been a long relationship, and that's really allowed me to get to know my community here in a really great way, and really love kind of talking to people about their own work and having an excuse to ask them lots of questions and be nosy about people's lives and what people are up to. And journalism is a great passport in that way. And I'm grateful that I was able to work on those kinds of skills for a lot of years before I started on this book, because I couldn't have done it without all of that preparation.
So where can people find out more information about you as a writer and some of the other things that you have done?
Well, I have a website. It's ericahauser.com, and that's a good place to see. There, you know, lots of links there to other things I've published and information about this book and my previous books as well. So that's the place to go.
Do you have a new project that you're already working on and doing some research for?
Well, at the moment, since The Age of Deer just came out a little over a month ago, I'm still really engaged with just talking about this book and doing readings. After I'm reading in Charleston on Thursday, I'll be heading to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania to do a reading there, and talking to a lot of people about the book, trying to get the word out. So that's what has my attention right now. But I am starting to think about what's next and what might be a good book to follow this one. And I think some of those, I don't know what it'll be yet, but some of those same questions are still at the top of my mind about the human place in the world and what we think of as natural, and kind of what's, when you start to dig into that, what's underneath that? What are some of the paradoxes and the contradictions underneath those kinds of words, natural, human, et cetera?
Yeah. It's very, very interesting. And I'm positive that you're going to have some books for sale as well at Taylor's. People will be able to come and get, you know, one of the books, also get it signed, get to meet you. I think this is a great opportunity for anyone who is, you know, an avid reader, anyone who is interested in even becoming a writer. I think it's really great to be able to meet an author and to be able to kind of just be in the presence of people that are creating things like this. I think I love book signings. I love readings. I think this is just such a great thing. And that, again, is going to be happening this Thursday night at Taylor Books. Do you know the time on that?
We are going to be starting at 6 p.m.
6 p.m. And that's more than likely it's happening in the cafe where there's seating and places to be. Taylor Books is kind of a staple here in Charleston, and you're in a beautiful section. Have you ever been to Charleston, West Virginia?
I have. Well, you mentioned James Cochran, who connected us. He's an old friend of mine from college, so I've visited him there, but I've not spent a lot of time in the city. It's been sort of a couple hours here and there. So I'm looking forward to at least one overnight in Charleston and getting to see a little bit more of the town for sure.
Well, I hope that you see some deer when you are here. They truly are. We really do have a large deer population. And you know, I have a friend who was actually just recently, she was moving and she was sad because she had a deer family that she saw on a regular basis in her backyard. And so she was really, really hoping to have, you know, that same kind of type of thing when she gets to her new house. And I told her, I'm pretty sure that as long as she puts out some food or things like that for them and has an attractant, that they will definitely be coming and visiting.
Well, that's probably true. And I just think it's fascinating how we really associate deer culturally with forests and wilderness. And if you think of an image or a representation of a deer, you're probably going to be picturing them among, you know, large trees and in a sort of deep, unbroken forest. But in fact, that's not ecologically the habitat that they most prefer. They like edges. So, you know, in a city or a place that has a lot of people, something that goes along with that are lots and lots of edges. So roadsides or, you know, the edge of a lawn or a park where it, you know, touches the woods. Those are places where deer can thrive. And that is part of the explanation for why they do so well in our, what we think of as our spaces, you know, our cities and towns and suburbs. And so, you know, people who are living like yourself in a city like Charleston are actually a lot more likely to see those large herds of deer than I am out here in a national forest.
Yeah.
So it's dramatic.
I think this is great. And I love this opportunity again for people to, you know, really sit and think about, you know, this relationship that we do have with deer. And we've had them since the existence of man, you know, that deer have played such an important role in our lives and in evolution of civilizations. And I love that you say you went through and really studied with, you know, how that affected the Native Americans as well. So I'm very excited to get to read your book and also to get to meet you at the event on Thursday night at Taylor Books, doing a book signing and reading. We've got author, journalist, and teacher Erica Hauser is here on the phone. Thank you so much, Erica, for taking some time out of your morning to talk to us about this event and about your book.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Maya. I really enjoyed it and really looking forward to coming to town and meeting folks in person on Thursday at the reading.
As we wrap up, is there anything that you would like to add or anything about, you know, either what you've learned with this book or just being an author?
Well, I think the process of writing this book really brought me to a new appreciation of deer and just gratitude for the fact that we are still sharing our space and our lives with them, because having learned more about their history, I now realize that we easily could be living in a world right now without very many deer at all. There's a lot more information about that aspect of the history in the book, but they are still here for the moment, and I think that's something to treasure and be grateful for.
I agree. Again, Erica is going to be at Taylor Books this Thursday night, going to be doing a book signing and a reading. That starts around, you said 6:30, is that right?
6 p.m.
Again, you can find out all the information on that on Facebook by going to Taylor Books. And what is your website one more time?
It's ericahauser.com. And I'll spell that because both of my names are frequently misspelled. So ericahauws, as in Sam, ARE.com.
Thank you so much, Erica. And I look forward to meeting you on Thursday.
You too, Maya. Thanks so much.
Thank you.